Okay, we're back for episode 213. Joe, how are you doing?
Just fine, Tim, and I'm doing a lot better than the people in Sydney and Melbourne.
Well, I think a lot of people are. But I guess the government just is trying to keep them safe. I heard there was one, I figured what position, maybe she was the some lady, I don't know, she was health minister or whatever she said.
Yeah, health minister of the region of whatever it is around Sydney, I believe.
And she said, don't have conversations with people. It was dangerous.
Yeah, conversations are dangerous.
Don't talk to anybody.
And this was underlined by the Masonic witch. I forget her, Jardine, the New Zealand prime minister.
Oh, Jacinda Ahern or something? Or
yeah.
Jacinda, right? Jacinda Ahern or Ahern.
She's just a complete witch. And she was, talking about how it's absolutely critical that you don't get information from anywhere else other than the government website about COVID, the vaccine, and any other aspect of reality.
That's true, because you never want to have too many sources of information. That's my experience. Like, we just want to have one go-to source.
Particularly without any bias and doesn't have any.
Yes.
You can just trust it forever.
No conflict of interest or ethical concerns.
No.
So that's good advice. That's what you tell people. That's how you tell people how to cope in this world. Just blind trust, blind faith in human institutions.
You think about that and you go, well, who is she actually addressing? There must be a cohort of really beaten down individuals, mm-hmm. individuals whose psychology has become shattered and might literally obey and just, whatever you say, I'll do. I was thinking about this the other day. I was getting some emails from people in the Melbourne area, and they were describing how just nightmarish it is. And, the thought occurred to me that, well, they were locked down for almost 4 months, over three months last year. They had little tiny bits of freedom, kind of incremental. They could go out in twos for half, and then now it's all, gone back to just a slave state lockdown where you can only leave your house 1 hour a day.
This must be because people are dying in droves. ICU units must be overwhelmed.
Oh, yeah.
They must be burning bodies, right? Because
I'm not exaggerating. I think the number was 11. This is like 5 million people.
And out of 5 million, 11 just, and probably what, elderly or comorbidities?
Yeah, they're all just ancient Aussie gangbangers. And then one person was dead, and that individual was 80 years old.
And this sparked the second lockdown.
Okay, so the rationale is threadbare at this point. It doesn't really even work as sophistry. It's just a slave state. But my thought was this. Okay, so they're definitely going to lock them down. This is the beginning of flu season. The first snap lockdown, I think, was for a 5-day period, and then it was extended. Now it's been extended again. So it's just, this is exactly the pattern as last year. So they're going to lock them down. Here's my point. What is going to be left of their psychologies when they crawl out of their homes, in 4 months? Because this second lockdown is surely going to shatter a lot of minds. In other words, the kind of buoyant, love life Aussie personality, I don't think we'll ever return to these people, regardless of the circumstance in the future. I think that they will be permanently damaged psychologically. And I hope that, the people in these areas consider that it really isn't enough just to sit there and hate the government and sit in your house and take the COVID food supply that they let you have. And then emerge, 6 months later or something, you've got to think about what it's going to do to you and your family. Even if you survive it physically, you've got to think about the mental damage. And so we talked about this a number of times over the last 3 or 4 months, because we could see this was going to happen. And the idea of just getting out, somehow escaping, sort of like an East Berlin type, get through the barbed wire with your kids. Now, the whole nation is under one kind of lockdown or another, but my understanding is that once you get outside of the metropolitan areas, the lockdowns are not as, draconianly enforced, and you can get to areas where you can actually have a semblance of a sane existence. I can't warrant that, Tim. These are just, pieces of information I'm getting. And I'm just expressing this not out of sort of any expertise, but just out of concern in my heart, because I want to say something. And I've just gotten so many emails indicating the agony that people are in right now with the lockdowns.
No, yeah, it's, they've servitized society under the flimsiest pretext, no evidence. No science to back it up or anything. It's really absurd. The fact that, that people have complied with this just goes to show this is the effect of the long-term dumbing down and the indoctrination of the public. Otherwise, we couldn't have gotten away with this. You create this sort of sleeping mass. It doesn't question anything. It's going to get to the point where you should start referring to Australia almost like the way that, the iron countries behind the Iron Curtain referred to during the Cold War. These are enslaved, imprisoned states. And there's no other way to phrase it. They're telling you can't leave your house, and you can't go more than 2 kilometers away and for only for a certain amount of time. And you got to put a mask on and only all because some elderly people are dying supposedly of a virus which has a lethality rate no more than a typical flu, if it exists at all. So again, at this juncture, it's a crisis of critical thinking by the majority.
And courage.
It's like, at some point, you're saying what? Wait a second, we have rights. You can't do this. Well, they can do it if you let them do it. And in Australia, they'll let them do it. They're a bit more rambunctious, I understand, in Paris, or in France, rather, even in England. They haven't tried to, it hasn't gotten that bad in the States. They've had, quote, lockdowns, but people never quite locked down, apparently the way they're complying in Australia.
Yeah, here in California, they had a kind of a quasi-hard lockdown where they were telling people to, stay in your houses, but it really wasn't kind of bought into by the public. We would go for walks on the beach and we didn't really notice much. In fact, at the very height of it all. People weren't really wearing masks outdoors, So it was a lockdown lie. Now that doesn't mean that it isn't going to come here.
No,
it's going to go over the entire world if we don't stop it. But I suggested that they picked particular regions to test out the draconian Soviet style slave state because of the Masonic controls a lot deeper. Where I live, you have a Latino mayor who's, I think kind of Catholic in her worldview. She's obviously corrupted by modern culture, but I just can't, you see what I'm saying is that, they gave her Masonic instructions. She might actually, blink. And so I think that they're just picking the low hanging fruit, and the poor people in Australia and of course in Victoria, Canada, and just didn't realize that they had the worst infection. Mm-hmm. That the Masonic control was very, very deep. I wouldn't be surprised in Melbourne and Sydney. It was down even to some extent to the cops on the street or lodge members. And if that's the case, then you really are in a slave state, because those individuals are sworn to follow orders to the the last degree. They are oath takers. In the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. They're oath takers for the Masonic control. And if they're told to kill citizens and children in order to create compliance, they won't have even the slightest hesitation. They'll just do it. So you have to take that in mind if you're going to take to the streets. You know, I mean, I was just going to say in general, you know, the protests, I think, you know, they're great, but only for alerting the citizens about the fact that there are people who have a voice and power and are willing, you know, to be visible and vocal about it. They have no meaning at all to the government. It's just
no. It's not like you appeal to them. People just have to stop complying and just come out and say do your worst. Because if everyone did, they don't have the manpower, or the means to enforce it.
Yeah, but they're not going to care that the public is upset. I think that's ridiculous. So anyway, if you're gonna, you know, you have to start operating. I would say the model would be like the French resistance during the German occupation, the Masonic German occupation, are people in the Soviet bloc, you know, in the early 60s, where you had individual pamphlet type communications, and they never were able to have a successful rebellion except in Hungary, where they did, you know, if you recall. So, but that's the kind of starting point of calculation would be, you know, we have been enslaved. They are going to kill us. The government is what is animating that. And we have to have communication among the people in order to organize resistance against it.
So, but there were some interesting developments, news this week. The United Church of Christ declares racism a public health crisis. So the United Church of Christ kicked off its special edition general synod on Sunday, July 11th by passing a resolution declaring racism a public health crisis. Delegates to the mainline denominations biennial meeting held virtually this year, of course, because of COVID. Approved a resolution to declare and respond to racism as a public health crisis with 96% of the vote during the opening plenary. The resolution was submitted by the UCC's Council for Health and Human Services Ministries and the Council on Racial and Ethnic Ministries. And I didn't say anything about crime being a public health crisis or a threat to public safety, but racism is. Reverend Elise Berry, Associate for Advocacy and Leadership for Development for the Council for Health and Human Services Ministries, told the denominations the resolution's approval set the tone for the general synod, which runs through next Sunday. Racial justice is intentionally woven throughout the synod, Berry said. Resolution calls on UCC churches to educate their members and advocate for public policies that work toward health equity. What is that? I mean,
I can imagine, but
are they going to like start lecturing, telling black people to eat better so they don't get diabetes and stop shooting each other and exercise and lay off the soda? Diabetes. I guess white people give black people diabetes because all those fast food restaurants they patronize. Look
at who brings the fast food into the inner city. Look at the corporations that are.
Yes, but they don't talk upon, about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the how same corporation. Yeah. Yeah.
But the woke corporations are backing this too. So
the woke corporation. I'll give you an example, Tim. Walmart.
Yes.
I mean, Walmart is the most woke corporation. It's like transgender, and of course, it's completely against white people. But it is also selling a nonstop stream of toxic poison right into the inner city every single day. I mean, the stuff that they sell there to those people, it's just incredible. And they take those snap cards, and if you've ever seen, it's probably too complicated to go into, but the people who sell to the snap cards are the ones who promote it. Like Walmart would be one, Costco. All right. So the degree that you benefit from it is the same degree that you create the financial control over politicians to keep it in place. And then you can actually tell I've seen some data on this. They can tell what they're selling. I mean, there isn't one healthy food item that these poor people are getting out of those places, you know? Mm-hmm. It's Coca-Cola and corn chips and just one, it's just one toxic thing after another. It's a nonstop shoot into diabetes.
Oh yeah, I get a kick at it, like during the peak of the pandemic, scamdemic, is the people were lining, you know, McDonald's, the drive-thrus, because the lobbies themselves, the restaurants themselves weren't servicing customers because of COVID. And you had these long lines to the drive-thru, and a lot of these places, they improvise and they set up whole systems, do a quick drive-thru. And I saw, you know, people line up with masks on, you know, getting their plastic food from McDonald's.
Their masks on, or they're getting their Big Mac, which, you know, is just a lump of toxicity. You know, it's strange, isn't it?
And ironic. More than like Anthony Fauci about public health, about, you know, of course, fast food and these things, because he's only concerned about infectious diseases. But they can call racism a public health crisis, but not, you know, junk food.
Yeah,
it's hurt the bottom line.
Yeah, that's right.
Also, remember the tainted food system is a downstream profit for the medical industrial complex, because all that treatment people need in their 40s and 50s for diabetes and heart disease and these things, cancer, these things are, you know,
big. It's an infinite loop, except it comes to an end when the invoice generator dies, you know, at an early age of obesity. I mean, yes. Other than that, they keep those creatures, you know, just going nonstop. It's just, I mean, do you ever go into Costco or Walmart?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I mean, you can get decent food items there.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that's one of the reasons we go there, is because like our Costco, they kind of fine tune them for the particular areas here. Organic food is a big deal. So they've just got half the stores organic. It's like you can get eggs and whatnot there, but we have not been spared, our community, the epidemic of obesity and diabetes. And I've mentioned before that, you know, the lineup of the obese and the electric carts.
Yes, you can see how, you know, 15 years ago, if you walk around places, they might have three carts to accommodate. Yeah. Now they have fleets of them.
They have fleets of them, but they've just introduced in our area the super wide. No, I'm serious. They now have the super wide. It's like, and they've actually changed the aisle in the farm.
That's not a new airline jet or anything.
It's the super wide. It's like a cart with an extra like 12 inches to accommodate the derrieres of like the 500 pounders. And they have like, I think they've strengthened the axles and things, because a lot of the carts were like breaking down midstream.
Well, they were had a problem with them tipping over because people reaching for their bags of chips or something, and so
yeah. Well, particularly when, you know, you've got a 500 pounder in there. I mean, they weren't designed for it. So now they've got, you know, like sturdier gears and wheels and things with the super wides. But this isn't an indication of like civilization, you know, like making progress. It's the opposite. I mean.
By the way, but they're all wearing masks, of course, these people in the carts, right?
Oh, absolutely, of course. I mean, you know, it's just, and then they show up at the counter to get like 15 prescription drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And you just wonder, you know, the AMA, I mean, it just is 100% satanic in my mind. Because at the top of it, they have to know, obviously they know. I mean, it's 100% clear that the 330 opioid prescriptions a year, that the you know, the rates of autism, you know, mm-hmm. it's we're dealing with in the medical world the same problem we have in the political world, which is that the secret society that runs it you know, has the workers' paradise smiley face, but in back of it is, you know, they just want to kill us as fast as they can, and if they can't kill us, they just want to weaken us so that we can't rebel. And that's why, you know, you created this, zombie apocalypse, which is already in existence, because you have so many individuals who've lost their humanity to drugs. And I mean, of course, the fentanyl brigade, they're obvious, but it's also, you know, Adderall, it's psychotropic stuff. Your humanity is gone. If you're taking, all of these drugs to keep your mood balanced, you're not a real human being.
Yeah, well, they've created an inhuman society, and they wonder why people go crazy. And then they deal with it with drugs. Yeah. Dr. Nancy Banks kind of summed it up. She wrote in a book, AIDS, Diamonds, and Empire. Says, my studies brought me to the realization that an allopathic medical profession is controlled from the top by the same interests that control banking, oil, precious metals, the military, and the associated intelligence agencies, the World Health Organization, the World Bank, IMF, and the various foundations and think tanks that frame and limit all level of intellectual inquiry in the United States and throughout the empire. Now, this is written, I think, 15 years ago. And yeah. Boy, is it more true than ever. If you look at the whole COVID scam and, it's...
Yeah, amazingly prescient.
So, this is funny. Portland Mayor mocked for Welcome Back Festival after riots. Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler has been mocked for hosting a Welcome Back Festival with roller skating and music for the city after the city was ravaged by protests and violence for more than a year. Welcome Back to the Heart of Portland includes free concerts, pop-up markets, and light displays in the Oregon City, which has been besieged by BLM demonstrations. Wheeler tweeted, you're invited to Portland's reopening with Welcome Back to the Heart of Portland. From Friday to Sunday, Portland's Central City will host free live concerts, roller skating, painting, and other fun, family-friendly activities. But many residents criticized him in the comments, saying Portland's downtown is not ready to host a family-friendly event. One local jokingly replied, who's providing armed security? another wrote, sad to hear that our mayor fell out of love with Portland right when we needed him. Monique Claiborne, president of the CEO of Greater Portland Inc., said, really, we're one step closer to imagining a future city that's inclusive and prosperous. Yeah, you blah, cheese. What is that? But Portland residents appeared to disagree, some slamming the event in light of the violence that has rocked the city for months. The once vibrant downtown was ravaged by the pandemic and also suffered looting and violent clashes between police and BLM protesters in the wake of George Floyd's death last year. Wheeler acknowledged the rise in crime rate on Sunday, telling Fox 12, we have clearly a gun violence problem in our community. You see, it's gun violence. we have a homicide problem. Notice the passive tense in this. We have a homicide problem.
People dying of some kind of bullet problem.
Yeah, it's a bullet problem. Bullets are flying around there. No one's pulling the trigger. And the community should expect that we should have adequate resources. That's the tools, training, and personnel to able to address the growing problem around gun violence and homicides in our community. It comes amid a push to force Wheeler out of office in response to the civil unrest that has gripped Portland. Total Recall PDX needs to collect 47,788 valid signatures, equivalent to 15% of the voters in the 2018 gubernatorial election, to force a recall. The group has until September to collect the votes and is confident of doubling the number of the signatures required. In April, Wheeler said he was determined to reclaim Portland from the anarchist mob that has inflicted criminal intimidation and violence on the streets. He praised BLM leaders for showing the courage to stand up to the mob and said that all together we can make a stand and take our city back here. But BLM was part of the violence that gripped the city.
Well, BLM is so interesting because it's like a quark. It's a wave and also it's matter. I mean, it's... the BLM is like, it's a, kind of political, social justice, kind of, I don't know. And of course you've seen the mission statement. So it's, kind of transgender focused.
Yeah.
But then it becomes Antifa and you get into bizarre, violent modes. But when it's violent, it's not BLM and
Something else, I guess.
Even though it's like, anyone can see, it's just one continuum. The BLM people have, if there ever was sort of an intellectual cohort that led it, lost control of that. They certainly weren't in control. I mean, it was Antifa that was running.
The mayor is the chief law enforcement officer of that city. It's his responsibility. he stood everything down. He could have come down with riot patrol and stopped it, and he didn't. There was an intentional stand down. Now he's taking the position as if this is something. This is like a hurricane hit the city or something. He has no control over it. They could. Many other cities, they stood down. The district attorney stood down. They release people. They're not prosecuting people. They're prosecuting people who defend themselves, who defend their property. It's a complete stand down. And him to depose, well, now we're going to take it back. Well, you gave it away, Mayor.
You think that I guess he has to try to come up with this smiley face, probably just to avoid prosecution downline, you know, that because otherwise it'd just be too obvious that he is actually part of the mob that was destroying the city. You know, I mean, everything that he did and all of the, Soros-funded open society DAs and mayor, they all worked.
You're the DA's office in St. Louis that right now, what's happening is often the district attorneys aren't showing up for trial, and because of that, they're letting the accused go. And some of these are accused murderers. So it's almost like they simply don't want to. They're not simply not doing their job. I mean, this is what you get. This is the idea of these Soros prosecutors.
At least there you have the physical signal of the person not being in attendance, whereas it's harder to spot when they actually show up for the press conference and give, the bizarre smiley face language where, we're all going to work to end racism and you can see the city burning in the background.
And ending racism is code for we're going to continue attacking white people.
And their property, and code for there's not going to be any prosecution, so we can
And what happened in St. Louis was Kim Gardner dropped the charges against that couple, and there's a Republican in the office in the DA's office that proceeded with the case, where they pled out.
There it is.
There you go.
they're on both sides. They're. The infestation is not in one party, it's in both. Yeah, so it's, what to do. God bless the people in Portland who are trying to organize a recall. Mm-hmm. And, these things are actually politically valuable because there'll be, I'm not sure there'll be crystal clarity, but there will be a clarity that the people who are in, voting will not have had for 100 years. I mean, they will understand the actual, the difference between the candidates. They may not understand the secret society and the puppeteers, who are pulling the string on this guy, but they sure have seen the effects, and they will be looking for a candidate who they can trust. I mean, I am absolutely positive if someone comes forward and goes, I'm a George Soros-funded candidate, and I want you to support me, and we're going to get rid of, I think this person would be voted down, because the people who are going to come forward with this, the recall, have the experience to inform them about the nature of the political division, that we have to try to create. We have to create a political wall against these individuals, mm-hmm. right? There's no other way to create a city that anyone can live in. I mean, this has happened everywhere. I was talking to someone who's in Seattle. It's gone. Portland, I mean, you probably saw the video that showed a failed city. Mm-hmm. There was just burning cars everywhere. There were people lying on the streets. People were using drugs out in the open. It was no place a family could exist. So the mayor, recall, he should be arrested.
Yeah, I know. He's lucky. He just... for dereliction duty and treason.
Yeah.
There's an MIT study. Vaccine hesitancy is highly informed, scientifically literate, and sophisticated. Vaccine hesitancy is a big problem, according to the Biden administration. Less than half the public is fully vaccinated, while about 56% have received at least one jab. I don't know if that's even true. The goal of...
No, it's not. It's not true. But I think it's less than 50 still, actually.
Yeah. The goal of fully vaccinating the American public appears to have stalled. Gee, I wonder why. This should not surprise us. When the vaccines were first approved for emergency use back in December 2020, 40% of Americans expressed skepticism about the vaccine. Trying to shame the holdouts has failed spectacularly, insulting and degrading them as morons and ignorant, and has resulted in vicious pushback and hardening of positions on getting vaccinated. The administration's plan of sending people door-to-door to vaccinate them only feeds anti-vaccine skepticism. Trust in authority is an all-time low, which makes a government-sponsored vaccine program suspect. The MIT on the problem revealed some surprising results. Proponents of the vaccine are unwilling or unable to understand the thinking of vaccine skeptics, or even admit the skeptics may be thinking at all. Their attempts to answer skepticism or understand it end up poisoned by condescension and end up reinforcing it. Basically, what the study found was that those who are skeptical of vaccine are very well informed.
Yeah, just the opposite of what they're trying to do. I saw that survey. It was one of these push surveys where they're trying to demonstrate that these Trumpers were, you know, troglodytes.
Which is strange, because Trumper was a big advocate of the vaccine.
Well, of course. I mean, dirty, so he's going to have to get the vaccine. But in any case, the people who won't take it have far more awareness of the reasons for not taking the so-called vaccine, and let's not call it a vaccine, the gene therapy, the experimental gene therapy. They won't take the experimental gene therapy because they know too damn much about it. In general. And the people who have, the other thing that was interesting about the survey, they found the people who were taking it tended to not know anything.
Yes.
They were just taking it. So this is.
Also, they have an inflated idea of how many people have died. They think millions have died from it, you know.
Of COVID. Yeah. They think COVID is
died from the disease.
Yeah. So they don't understand any of the realities. They just have succumbed to the propaganda elements and, you know, the headlines and the newspapers and TV. And they just think that vaccine safe, effective, COVID, a nightmare killer. It's everything is clear. But they don't know anything at all about what the experimental gene therapy is. And relative to the people who aren't taking it, they have no sophistication. We have talked about what I call the purification, probably an unfortunate term. I get constant criticism for using it, but it does seem to be descriptive. And you can see kind of the outlines of what the future will be in one scenario anyway, just in the survey, because there's nothing you can do to vaccinate someone who really understands both, not just the lethality of the, you know, the acute phase of the vaccine rollout, but the long-term potential. If you get someone who's actually just aware that there's autoimmune potential, right, and who is also aware that there's really not much lethality in the COVID so-called illness,
take it? Why risk it?
Unless you've got a gun to the person's head, they're not going to do it. So this is actually, Tim, and hats off to you. And all the people in independent media, because this is your triumph. We have stopped them at the gates, because I think that there's no way they're going to get more than 60% of any European country or cohort vaccinated. It'll be a lot less than Africa, incidentally, but that's another story. But the thing is, the remainder is undigestible. They can't, you know, what can they do with this? Particularly if you start seeing the vax dropping like flies, we are just heading pell-mell toward what I would imagine is a civil war of some kind, because they're, you know, having committed to this course, the secret society. I mean, I'm open for ideas, Tim, but I don't know what else they can do but just try to kill everybody.
Well, yeah, because they've exposed themselves so much.
Yeah, they've exposed themselves. Yeah, and when you get, you know, like, it's something we need to go into, like, to the degree of mortality from the vaccine. It's impossible to know the truth at this point. The numbers have been deliberately blurred. You know, last week we talked about the adverse event study that Lazarus Group had done for the NHS and you know, on the, at, with the idea of informing the CDC. In the study, they presented the fact that the adverse events were far less than had actually been reported. And they showed there was a mechanically perfect way of determining the amount of adverse effects that were coming out of not just the vaccines, but of all drugs. The response of the CDC to what would be a solution to the one of the greatest health crises in the history of mankind was to stop answering the phone. And yep. This isn't an exaggeration. It's not, a, you know, it's not, doesn't come from conspiracy theory. All Americans who want to understand the reality of what we're living in, all Europeans, I mean, people in Australia should be understanding this too, because believe me, this tells you the nature of the lockdown you're experiencing, what it really is in back of it. When you look at how clear the data could be and how deliberately the CDC shut down the process so the data couldn't come forward to the public, and then you look at where we are today with the mortality of the vaccine, where no one knows. Last week, the CDC, from one day to the next, reduced the number of mortalities by 50%, with no explanation. Well, with trivial explanation, but the idea that their data collection and presentation to the public is so weak, so erroneous, that they could actually, you know, with a straight face, reduce the number by 50%. Look, we will never get good information, data from these guys. It's always going to be piecemeal. It's always going to be from the people who are, the conspiracy theorists and independent media. It's all that we're ever going to get, because you can be absolutely certain that they're going to try to boil the frog, that they will deny the deaths are occurring. They will give them some other cause. They will claim it's the unvaxxed, you know, killing these people with the infections. I mean, they will do everything possible to boil the frog and to keep killing us as quickly as they can. But if more than 40% stay unvaxxed, it's all for naught, because at the end of all that, the people who are unvaxxed are going to be clear-minded and prepared to fight. And I think that this is actually a possibility, Tim. I mean, you know, you look at something like Melbourne and Sydney and the people agreeing to the lockdown, and you go, you know, it's tragic. And maybe, you know, there's just some fundamental weakness inside humans that were easy to enslave. But at the same time, they're not taking the vax. The Aussies are not taking the vax. So we'll see where it all goes when the public starts to turn, when they realize that this is never going to stop, that they have announced themselves, that what you're looking at is the secret society that rules the government has announced themselves to you, and that they're going to exterminate you. So now it's up to you to act accordingly.
Yeah, and they, I mean, they kind of expose the vulnerability of their position, at least the when the Biden administration comes out and openly advocates, you know, for social media tech companies to censor and deplatform and shut down all criticism or critiquing of their policy. I mean, the fact you had a sitting administration openly sitting American, you know, U.S. president saying we need to silence critics. I mean, can you imagine if Trump had done that, said that we need to shut down media when they're talking about like Russia collusion or something? If Trump had said, this is irresponsible, no evidence for it, it's fake news, it's misinformation, and, you know, I'm calling on media and social media companies to shut it down. I mean, it's outrageous. We can't deal with the argument, contend with the argument or the points they're making, so we're just going to declare it fake news or disinformation and just shut it down, you know?
It's the end of democracy. Yes. I mean, when the government says we are shutting down discourse, there's no difference between that and dictatorship. I mean, that is dictatorship. Mm-hmm. You can't think any thoughts other than the ones we're going to give you.
Well, the government, they're just strongly encouraging companies to do it.
Right. You know. But they are shutting down dissent and questioning everywhere. all of the DARPA funded, you know, social media programs, Google, Facebook, you know, they're all just, I've been in like three sort of research and vaccine damage groups, and Facebook has banned all of them. They just disappeared. Powers and Principalities, the, that infamous show with Tim and Joe, we were kicked off of YouTube, you know? So they are shutting down anyone with an opposing point of view,
This is interference with election. Talk about interference with elections when you start, throttling information in social media, which is sort of the public sphere now, and you start using algorithms to shadow ban or ghost ban, or deplatform. Prevent competing opinions or alternative views from being expressed on these sites. That's you're manipulating with public opinion. And Facebook was caught doing that in Ireland in the run up to the referendum on abortion a few years ago.
And they do it here relentlessly. Yes, they're always doing it.
How about the FBI reporting like there's something to the Russia collusion thing? isn't that screwing with the election with the political process,
So democracy doesn't exist. It has been subverted and taken over, unfortunately. So, at a low level, down ballot, there might be some. Obviously, there are some things you can do and should do, but at the top, there's nothing there even to think about. It's just it is a secret society, and we have to work around them.
Michigan governor to be stripped of emergency powers used for COVID-19 rules. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer will be stripped of emergency powers she used during the coronavirus pandemic after a 76-year-old law was repealed Wednesday. The GOP-led state house followed the Senate's lead on Wednesday in voting 60-48, largely along party lines, to support Unlock Michigan petition seeking to eliminate the emergency powers of the Governor Act of 1945. Whitmer, a Democrat, is unable to issue a veto after the state Supreme Court determined the law was unconstitutional. The repeal will not take effect until 91 days after the legislature adjourns at the end of the year. The Michigan House approved the Unlock Michigan Citizens Initiative to repeal the unconstitutional 1945 state law Governor Gretchen Whitmer used to hold unilateral power over the people of Michigan during the COVID-19 pandemic. Your voices have been heard, Michigan House Republicans tweeted following the vote. The measure protects the fundamental structure of representation government and is a win for democracy, said State Rep. Sue Allor. When Governor Whitmer decided to go it alone during the pandemic, her orders left struggling people in their wake, added State Representative Ken Borton, who also supported the petition. A solo approach was clearly wrong for our state. The governor must work with the legislature to discover real solutions that work for everyone. And Unlock Michigan will help protect the people by protecting the legislative process. Democrats slammed the repeal effort with State Representative Mary Manoogian calling Unlock Michigan's petition a partisan political battle, a power grab aimed at undermining Governor Gretchen Whitmer and her effort to manage the COVID-19 pandemic. That's funny to call that a power grab by pulling power away from the governor. I guess that wasn't a power grab on her part. No. This initiated law will cripple the ability of governors from both parties to act quickly. I think that's the point. Missed the point, you moron. The petition was certified in the unanimous June 11th ruling from the Michigan Supreme Court. Although supporters of Whitmer said the governor's actions were necessary to save lives as COVID-19 spread throughout the state, detractors who signed the petition argued her actions were a dangerous threat to our livelihoods and constitutional liberties. Whitmer imposed rigorous restrictions aimed at curbing the spread of COVID-19, well, supposedly, including restricting travel, implementing statewide mask mandates, of course, as she and her cohorts actually violated those very rules. Michigan has recorded more than 1 million cases of COVID-19. Wow, so it's 1 million cases, positive tests, with 21,124 statewide deaths attributed to the disease, according to Johns Hopkins University COVID-19 tracker. I looked up the numbers. Basically, what's odd about that is the deaths in 2020 were roughly the same in 2019 and 2018. So what happened?
Yeah, it was just it was only the people in the retirement homes that got murdered.
There was a spike in April and May. Yeah, there was a spike.
And between February and April, there was a spike when she murdered, I think it was like about 20,000 people.
Yeah, her lockdown orders. Yeah.
Exactly. The lockdown orders. And then also the insertion orders where they had to take patients who had pneumonia to make room for the COVIDs. It was the MO.
Yeah.
All of those, the most Masonic governors that we have, they all did it. You know, obviously Cuomo was the best known of this,
yes,
but Christie did it, Whitmer did. They all had this insertion order where they put, you know, total breach of normal protocol where they put, pneumonia victims into these retirement homes. And at the same time, they were locking them down so they couldn't get.
They were neglected. Samples. Yeah.
Yeah, they were neglected. And they just accelerated the death rate dramatically. And then they got the body count and the fear so that then we could move into, you know, the lockdown stuff. But, you know, what kind of it's interesting is that, so, you know, you have this idea that they brought out, the Democrats said, well, Whitmore, you know, she's lost the power, you know, and she can't respond quickly. Well, okay, you know, there is that. But where is the discussion of the comparison of her efforts with countries that had more intelligent approaches like Sweden?
Yeah, or states like South Dakota.
Or states, right, exactly. But I was just, it's fascinating. If you go to Sweden in the same world coronavirus WHO, I don't trust the data, but, you know, in some instances, I think it's just sort of self-evident. I mean, Sweden now has zero. Mm-hmm. They don't have anyone dying from it. They're not, there's no Delta variant that is like ravaging, you know, the Swedes. And no matter how you cut it, their approach produced better psychological health and certainly a better economy.
Yes.
When you look at these destroyed areas, right, they usually had the most draconian lockdowns, right? So they're now experiencing the double whammy of a failed medical policy and a failed financial policy and a failure of psychological well-being in the inhabitants. And these things, these cities are just kind of, in my opinion, they're very much like schools. I mentioned this before that, you know, there is kind of a delicate sort of racial relationship that keeps these things intact. And when you have a large fraction of kind of the sustaining European and middle-class African-Americans and Asians take off, then you lose the next tranche underneath them, and now you're just spiraling down. And this is what they foresaw, and this is what is happening. It's happened. It's not a theoretical event. So when you think about, you know, Gretchen, you have all of these examples in fact now, right? They're all there. They're just sitting right in front of you. You got Sweden, you got the states that didn't lock down. You have the cities that the cities that locked down the hardest, the states that locked down the hardest. You have countries that attempted a zero COVID approach, like Australia. I mean, Australia, you recall, had a zero, the idea was they were going to exterminate. We're going to get rid of COVID.
Yeah.
So they have these lockdowns. Now, where are they relative to Sweden? The Swedes are having a completely normal life, and the Australians can't go out of their house but an hour a day. Whose policy was better? So where's the discussion of that? When they criticize Whitmer, okay, are they defender? The Republicans, they talk these platitudes about democracy. The hell with that. They should be hammering her on the failure of the policy and say that, this will strengthen our ability to never let this happen again. Because, you know, so many times you get legal victories or even political victories like this one, and they don't mean anything. Because then the next time they want to lock down, they get enough Masonic Republicans to join them, and then they go, well, democracy is won out again.
Yeah, yeah. Or just prove that, where's the proof of an actual pandemic?
Yeah.
People just accept that as a given in these various court cases, that there actually is an emergency. Well, obviously, if you have emergency powers, there has to be some way to determine whether or not the emergency actually exists. If you just give it carte blanche,
yeah.
declared emergency. Well, guess what? You're gonna have a whole lot of emergencies. I think we're still, the country's still in a state of emergency since 9/11, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just an excuse for, you know, gave a blank check to politicians. Interesting. FBI agent Whitmore kidnapping case arrested following domestic incident. The rest of an FBI agent credited with helping thwart a plot. Actually, he helped hatch the plot. The kidnap and kill Gretchen Whitmore complicates one of the more closely watched cases of the violent extremism that is becoming increasingly focused on allegations of wrongdoing by investigators. Special Agent Richard Trask, 39, of Kalamazoo, was charged Monday with assault with intent to do great bodily harm, less than murder, following a domestic incident with his wife Sunday. He was released on $10,000 personal recognizance bond following an arraignment in 8th District Court in Kalamazoo, and faces charges punishable up to 10 years in prison. So this is the guy spearheading the investigation. Of course, we now know that that plot to kidnap the governor was pretty much staged by the FBI. The conspirators, I think half of whom were actually FBI informants, or at least maybe like the primary, you know, characters in it. They coaxed other people into talking about it. Some people actually backed up, so we're not going to get involved with it. Nevertheless, the FBI arrested him as part of this conspiracy. This was yet another example. This was reported in the fall of 2020, just before the election. Yet another example of the FBI getting involved in elections, because Michigan, of course, you know, Biden won, right? With those that last minute vote, tranche of votes that came in. That story, you know, was created to affect the election results. We now know that, you know, this, they had a bunch of FBI informants that was set up. It was an FBI sting operation. You know, this also is what we're also finding about the January 6th event, whereas the FBI and various other intelligence agencies has as many as 15 confidential informants, of 15, I think, unidentified co-conspirators, suggesting that the whole thing was set up by the FBI to kind of create the sort of the narrative of nonsense we're hearing now about the January 6th event. So, you know, this character here, not a very good guy. It's, you know, black eye for the FBI there.
Yeah, but good point you made that this was obvious election interference.
Mm-hmm.
And no question. And by a national intelligence agency.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this should have been grounds to void the entire election and just start from scratch. And mm-hmm. I mean, this is, it's just clear cut. I don't understand any way that democracy could operate, but it's never even discussed. You're the first person that even, where it even brings up this point.
Well, the whole FBI Russia collusion thing was there to delegitimize 2016 results for 4 years.
Yeah, and this was done. Yeah, this was done. You know, they were going to rig the election anyway,
mm-hmm.
but they wanted to, you know, create some plausible anti-Trump, you know, kind of political momentum. So that when they rigged it wouldn't look just preposterous, even though it ended up looking pretty weak. But, you know, like the Russian thing and that the FBI, you know, Whitmore's attempt at kidnapping. I mean, they were interfering with the national election. Government agencies were, period. So the election should be void. There's, you know, in the last week, you've probably been seeing the, you know, in Pennsylvania, I think, and in Arizona, they have, you know, seemingly coherent, you know, kind of studies going on about election irregularities.
Mm-hmm.
I just sad to say it, but I just think this is just a distraction. I mean, I know some people are still very caught up in the emotion of all this, but to me, it's really the only issue is the vaccine. And then the purified organizing to defend themselves, because the kind of the political veneer, you know, the illusion of democracy, at least to me, Tim, it just doesn't have any kind of tangible essence at this point. It's really, you know, it comes down to, you know, what political activity is really like block by block, farmers markets. You know, incidentally, I'm getting a number of people who are doing the farmers market coffee tables, different mm-hmm. approaches. And they're meeting, you know, there's a lot of the pro-vaxxers will often, you know, be confrontational. But I, my response to them when I get communications from them is to say, look, going forward, we can imagine that there'll be more serious interest in your position as people are literally dropping on the sidewalks from the vaccine, if this is going to be occurring, which I suspect it will. And therefore, you're setting up a point of assembly. I mean, this is really critical. So I hope everyone that has the ability to do so and the courage, because, you know, obviously it's not a, you know, it's not a babe magnet, if you know what I mean, you know, to yeah. get out there with your, you know, coffee table and, you know, and try to defend freedom, you know, but you're setting up a point of assembly and you have to look downstream. If you, even if you end up with just five people that are interested, as long as you're, you know, no black eyes and you could keep coming back, in the future, you could become a point of assembly, you know, where people who, when they start realizing we have to organize, they'll know where to go.
Yeah. And then, of course, they'll ban that because that's disinformation.
Yeah. Well, but then you'll take whatever you've got in the ways of organization and move to some other place.
Yeah. The federal judge upholds Indiana University's vaccine mandate and what appeared to be the first ruling upholding a coronavirus vaccine mandate by a university. A federal judge affirmed on Monday that Indiana University could require that its students be vaccinated against the virus. A lawyer for eight student plaintiffs had argued that requiring the vaccine violated their right to bodily integrity and autonomy, and that the coronavirus vaccines have only emergency use authorization from the Food and Drug Administration and should not be considered part of the normal range of vaccinations schools require, without an appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court if necessary. What we have here is the government forcing you to do something that you strenuously object to and have your body invaded in the process, said lawyer James Bopp Jr. He said the appeal would be paid for by American Frontline Doctors, a conservative organization that has been pursuing an anti-vaccine agenda. Mr. Bopp of Terre Haute, Indiana, is known for his legal advocacy promoting conservative causes. Mr. Bopp filed the lawsuit in June after Indiana University announced the previous month that faculty, staff, students would be required to get coronavirus vaccinations before coming to school this fall. The university, whose main campus is in Bloomington, Indiana, said the students who do not comply would have their class registrations canceled and would be barred from campus activities. The requirement permitted exemptions only for religious objections, documented allergies to vaccines, medical deferrals, and a virtual class attendance. On Monday, Judge Damon R. Lichty of the U.S. District Court of Northern Indiana said that while he recognized students' interest in refusing unwarranted medical treatment, such a right must be weighed against the state's greater interest. The 14th Amendment permits Indiana University to pursue a reasonable and due process of vaccinations in the legitimate interest of public health for its students, faculty, and staff, he said, noting that the university had made exemptions for students who object. Well, again, a lot of sophistry there. First of all, it's not a vaccine problem right there. Again, just because you're a student at a state university doesn't mean that you consent to be a guinea pig in a medical experiment. It's an experimental drug, which is not safe because it's not approved by the FDA, and nor is there an emergency. And just that's another thing is, what emergency? Oh, they said there was an emergency, but really, the facts just aren't there. The data isn't there to claim there's any pandemic or emergency to justify it. So, you know, there's that. The courts are going to do that. I mean, I'm not surprised by that. Eric Clapton says he will not play shows where proof of vaccine is required. Eric Clapton said he will not perform at any venues that require attendance to prove that they've been vaccinated against COVID-19. Clapton issued a statement in response to Prime Minister Boris Johnson's announcement on Monday, July 19th, that vaccine passes would be required to enter nightclubs and venues. Clapton's statement was shared via Telegram, his Telegram account, of the film of film producer architect Robin Monetti, who also had been skeptical of the COVID-19 vaccine and expressed other doubts about UK government's response to the pandemic. Clapton previously shared a message about his disastrous health experience after receiving the COVID-19 vaccine on Monetti's Telegram page. Following the Prime Minister's announcement on Monday, the 19th of July, 2021, I feel honor-bound to make an announcement of my own, Clapton said. I wish to say that I will not perform on any stage where there is a discriminated audience present unless there is provisions made for all people to attend. I reserve the right to cancel the show. The message was accompanied by a link to Clapton's anti-lockdown song, Van Morrison, Stand and Deliver. Representatives for Clapton did not immediately return Rolling Stone's request for comments. So good for Eric Clapton.
Yeah, I can imagine a completely bifurcated society, you know, for a period of time where, you know, the vaxxed will be herded into these stadiums and, you know, can watch Lady Gaga and Madonna, you know, in some kind of satanic ritual. And everyone else will just have to find other ways of entertainment, none of which could, like, be lower than the degenerate, you know, stuff that they've been feeding us over the last, you know, 50 years. So nothing to lose there. I mean, I thought it was great that Clapton made that public statement. It's very, very useful. But this is just a very small price to pay, isn't it? I mean, that, you know, you don't take the gene therapy and that means you can't go to the degenerate, you know, rave or whatever, you know, just this is the bifurcation. The people that want to go to that, it shows you how impotent the whole line of propaganda is at this point. It's like pushing on a string.
Yeah.
Because the people that would want to see Lady Gaga, they're all vaxxed.
Yeah.
You don't care about them. They're vaxxed and they're on fentanyl, for God's sakes. The vaccine is the least of their problems. So there's nothing to offer at this point. And I think even employment is the kind of jobs that we'll be mandating it are, you know, I don't know. I just think that it'll be pretty easy to opt out. There'll be more wholesome kinds of ways to make a living. And in terms of the university, they created all those loopholes. You can, you know,
religious, it's a site of religious exemption.
Yeah, well, I've had a, you know, an epiphany and I now am at the church of the unvaxxed, you know. I mean, how can this, I thought that was an example of the pushing on the string position where they've reached the end. Is, you know, it's funny because everyone's talking about, oh my God, there's going to be, you know, this draconian, you know. Well, look, they may take to like trying to force us at the point of a gun, but the propaganda has been, they've shot their bolt. I just don't think it's really gonna, I mean, the people going door to door, I've gotten some reports of this in North Carolina, and the communities that have experienced it literally are laughing them out of the area.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, getting anyone jabbed. So I don't know. You know, it's we're coming here, Tim, to, as they say, the crossroads. It's coming up pretty fast, and people just have to be ready because
that is an Eric Clapton song. So
I know that's right. I actually was aware of
it. Just for non boomer listeners out there.
Yeah, that's right. So the thing is, you know, we're going to be at the crossroads here.
Isn't that where you sell your soul to the devil?
Right. Well, you sell your soul and take the vax, or you walk into like freedom. But there's a price for freedom.
Yes.
And sometimes this blood, you know, you're not going to get it for free. Not now. Not after they've made the declaration. They can't go back. It's not going to happen. We're moving toward, you know. I have no idea what the future holds, Tim. I just know that I can't imagine them walking back from this. I don't know how they would do it.
Yeah, it's so because their credibility is shot. I think it is with half the public now.
They'll lose their power because they'll be exposed. So they're not going to do that. So they're going to try everything they can to exterminate the unvaxxed. But one thing I don't think they're going to be able to use to get us off the planet is the vaccine. I just think that that's... you know, they're not going to eat away with that thing. It's come. They've shot it. They shot the bolt, and now, now we're into uncharted waters, buddy.
Minnesota Vikings assistant coach reportedly is out after he refuses to take the vaccine. An NFL position coach has reportedly parted ways with his team after refusing to be vaccinated against COVID-19. According to ESPN, Rick Dennison, the offensive line coach and run game coordinator for the Minnesota Vikings, is leaving his club as a result of his decision not to take a vaccine. The report, which cites unnamed sources, does not make clear whether Dennison voluntarily left or was fired. The Athletic later corroborated ESPN's report. The NFL is requiring the vaccine for all staff it identifies as Tier 1, a group which includes coaches, executives, equipment managers, to name a few. Those in this group who refuse the vaccine for anything other than what the league deems a valid medical or religious reason, there you go again, are prohibited from being what the league deems on the field and having direct interaction with players. What are the players? The players last year when they played, there was I think only two reported in symptomatic cases in the NFL.
Yeah.
Despite all the bumping and slamming into each other, the blood, the perspiration, the saliva.
Yeah.
You know, what does that say about this disease? I mean,
and it's true in rugby. I mean, in rugby, they're practically, you know, slurping up one another's saliva for 4 minutes. It's a disgusting spectacle, but the idea that if there was a real highly infectious disease afoot, you couldn't get like these games even to get to halftime.
Mm-hmm.
Those things really put the lie to the idea that there was this demonic and infectious disease out killing. Yeah, I mean, it's where do you go if you're at the NFL? They've had like sports stadiums filled all over the place recently. There's mm-hmm. been no infection. They can talk, the variant meme. But Tim, do you think the variant meme is really going to fool the public? You know,
they're talking about different names. I mean, yeah. Delta, was it Lambda, Epsilon?
Lambda, yeah.
And I guess that's why you've had this recent attempt to reinstitute mass mandates or requirements, and apparently LA did it, and the LA sheriff said he wasn't going to enforce it because it's stupid.
It's anti-science.
But the mask, again, made this point before, the mask was always a prop to maintain the illusion of a pandemic, because the pandemic, that illusion is necessary to get people to accept the jab, so-called vaccine. So if people just walking around without a mask on, people are less apt to go out feel less pressure to get the jab. So again, this is all about, and it doesn't make any sense. Like I said, these masks never made any sense. Assuming that the mask did provide some barrier prophylactic protection from said virus or microbe, the practicality of millions, tens of millions, in fact, even hundreds of millions or billions of people wearing masks all day, poking them, touching, reusing old masks, the stuff, not cleaning them. That's what people do, put them in their glove compartment, hanging from the windshield rearview mirror, put it on the go into the store, put it back on again. The practical effect, or even like kids, do you think kids are going to use the mask properly? They issue these mandates on any instruction how to use them, what type of mask to use. It shows just how that itself indicts, that policy. Obviously, there's no
science. Good point.
Not to mention, in fact, if you have this mask get older, you're going to start to breathe in particles, which may get caught in your lungs and cause respiratory problems, disease, which then they'll blame on a virus, of course. But I mean, so it never made any sense. The practicality of it is that even that's why masks are never used outside a very strict clinical setting in casual settings.
Let me just interject with like here in Santa Barbara. Okay, so I was with my friend and we were going to go to a tennis match. There was a group of people were going to look at this tennis match.
Uh-huh.
And at the sports facility that said mask required, it was a couple months ago. And so I go, oh God, I don't have a mask, And he goes, don't worry, I have a used one right here.
There you go. Yeah.
I go, okay, well, that's going to work. This will protect me. Your used mask that you won't even wear, which was on the floor of the car.
Yes.
So this is the thing. It was, you know, it was always just a symbol of of obedience and of the reality of a disease that wasn't there. You pointed this out like over a year ago.
Yeah. They contradicted. Fauci and the Surgeon General at the time, Adams. I think last name is Adams. They admitted to lying about it when they said you don't need a mask. Remember? And they gave a very good reason, because the touching and all that stuff, it's not very effective. Then it switched on a dime overnight, and then it became necessary. Then it became wearing three masks, you know. And so, you know, people see this, go, what? You know, and then already these public health authorities are exposed as being sort of political bureaucrats who can't be trusted. They're playing politics with this stuff. And that's just that's just a small example of this stuff. But it's on its face, it's absurd. I mean, come on, handkerchiefs were being used, or bandanas rather. Really? And people walk around and say, look, and they're not doing it because they think it's safe. They're doing it just because they're complying.
Yeah. They're
complying with it so they can get in and not be hassled, you know. But I don't think it's going to take again. Like, people there's going to be, you know, that cohort, 35% that are going to do it. But I'm watching. I mean, they haven't really in earnest tried to do that around here. But like I said, the statement from the LA County Sheriff saying no science, we're not going to do it, means that, you know, they're not going to try to enforce this thing. But again, just the announcement of masks being necessary, the news reports, even though people aren't doing it, it gets it out there, the public consciousness that there's something out there, therefore go get the jab. You know, it's easier for companies to mandate their employees get it if masks are being considered, or there's mask mandates, or you can't go into a shopping center without a mask on. You know, but it is interesting is if people aren't enforcing it, to see how many people comply, because the employees aren't going to they're exhausted, they're tired of it, you know.
Yeah, I don't have good sense. Whenever I would say something like this, I'd like to actually have been there. I haven't been to L.A., but I have people that I talk to there, and they say the mask mandate is a lead balloon. Yeah. That people just aren't doing it. The sheriff's statement kind of was all anyone needed, and most businesses no one is even paying any attention to it at the moment. So we'll see. I mean,
there's a crime epidemic, and they're worrying about masks.
Yeah.
If we're going to use the medical, you know, this language with medical, if you're going to mix the two, this epidemic of crime because of all the other things that are going on. But we're supposed to worry about, you know, phantom viruses and racism, and not worry about what they've done with the economy or crime.
Imagine a middle class family driving down Olympic Boulevard in the middle of Los Angeles next to 5 miles of homeless shelters where the bodies are all piled on top of each other, passed out. People are using needles with one another in public.
But that's not a health crisis, racism.
Right. And then they get to Trader Joe's and they say, you got to put your mask on. I mean, it's the juxtaposition is not useful for the COVID enforcement brigade.
Yeah, well, there's a statement that a friend sent me, this Dr. Wen, she's, I think she comes out of Baltimore, but she used to former head of Planned Parenthood in that city, I think it was in Baltimore, Maryland somewhere. But she she's a typical, like, technocratic ghoul, perfect technocrat, Asian woman, you know, just
how do we get these Asian women?
Because they're perfect technocrats. It's just,
I mean, they must have some
Jiro Hamamoto wrote about that in this book, Services of Empire. He wrote about there's something in the Asian character that makes him very good for this. Just like they are the Indian who's the, I don't know if he's Indian or Pakistani, but they're Surgeon General now just because of these orders. They just, you know, they're just, you know, not to say that, you know, European people of European descent can't become soulless technocrats or whatever. But said that for people whose children aren't vaccinated, it's important you wear masks at home inside because they're not vaccinated. What did she talk? I mean, show me the science. What are you talking about? If they're vaccinated at home, and I'm like, you really, again, it goes back to the question, the fact that you're making children wear masks, do you think kids are going to wear masks? Even if, again, assuming they did work, children are going to use them properly? And again, there's no instruction on what type of mask you do wear. It's just, but you know, people at home wearing masks inside, what are you, nuts? I mean, who would listen to this advice? It's dying, but because it's a doctor, it's apparently we're supposed
to. You know, and okay, but that's the question is who would listen to it? And the, you know, the Satanists and the Fentanyl Brigade who are crowding into the Lady Gaga concert, they're gonna buy into it and they will listen to her, but their souls are gone. The MIT study, which showed, you know, that like the vax refusers have more kind of like intellectual sort of grip. You know, okay, what they should have done is have a study of, which group has an absence of human spirit? Because what they would find is that they are, at the very best, the vaxxed are robotic. I mean, they, like, I deal with these guys all the time, and they have no sense of humor and are robotic, like the Asian lady, you know, at the best. But the worst is just the fentanyl brigade. I mean, they are narcissized, self-indulgent, you know. I mean, they are literally, they are kind of the brave new world post-humanity, you know, coming into the existence.
Yeah.
So this is the why the future is bright, because there's going to be fewer and fewer real human beings. And as long as we can simply defend what we are, we'll have the whole planet to ourselves. It's taking a page from the oligarch's playbook. I mean, you know, the unvaxxed, you know, and it's just, again, I feel heartless, and, you know, this is like coming almost from a bad place in the heart, but it's just an observation, Tim. I look at these, you know, I was at this, there was a, I won't go into the details, but it was a local event. There was a lot of people there, and there was a lot of vaxxed people there. And you could, you know, just see the absence of humanity. And they're degenerate and dim. You know, they just don't have any, no life left in them, you know. And so they've gathered that group in with the propaganda. They've been able to get them to take not just the vax, but the drugs. I mean, think about the drugs that these people have taken during their lives, you know.
Yeah.
And so they are now kind of in a post-human condition. We cannot align ourselves with them democratically. There's just no way as a group that we can be with them and elect representatives that can defend real humanity. It's impossible. So the fact that society is splitting, this is not a bad thing in my mind. It's inevitable. It had to happen. You know, the question is just, will the humans have a place where they can have a future?
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's the question. That's the battle, I guess. That's the battle. Those are the battle lines.
For sure.
They're being drawn. So. Well, Joe, we didn't get to our main topic.
No, we never do, it seems like. we have it for next week, but
yeah,
you know, there's, which incidentally, it's really something, you know, we're going to talk about the, how children are manipulated, you know, and led astray. It's like a really important thing. I mean, I'd been like studying the Mouseketeers all week, you know, as an example. I mean, you know, because I really think there's like a direct pipeline from the afternoon fairy tales in the, you know, in the Hungarian Soviet, you know, with Gregor Lukacs and his Judeo-Masonic outfit, you know, and they were sexual degeneracy in the morning, and then fairy tales, and they were bragging about how the kids were disassociating from being human beings. And then you get the Mouseketeers coming out of the demolé cesspool Disney. I mean, to me, it's literally a straight line. And particularly when you look at that, I thought that even before I realized the American intelligence organizations that had helped create Disneyland. And it helped, you know, so, and then when you look at that, those groups, and you can see MK Ultra, you can actually see the Frankfurt School in operation there. So yeah, it's, this is just a very subtle psychological operation. And then over time, Tim, this leads to the degenerate culture we have now, where you have Lady Gaga concerts.
Yeah, and people willingly taking the jab. So,
yeah.
Okay, Joe.
All right, Tim. Well, have a great weekend, and we'll discuss all this next week.
Until next week, take it easy.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.